When I was living on my own for the first time, I had to go to the store and get milk and paper towels. And that was the first time I was like, wow, I am such a freaking adult. I really appreciate the childhood my parents were able to give me. I'm really privileged to have grown up in a functional house where my parents didn't want me to die. I made a parent stories video a little over a year ago, and I rewatched it to make sure I didn't repeat any topics. And all I'm gonna say is those stories and animation are not worth 10 million views. That video, I don't like it. I don't like that video. My parents were really, really big on manners and being polite. We've got some Asian blood in us, so we can't bring dishonor to our family. We'd do all the typical things, like call adults Mr. and Mrs., ask to be excused from dinner, make sure to thank everyone for everything ever, bow to our superiors. When my mom had new people come over to the house, she would make me introduce myself and shake their hand. And then when no one was looking, she'd pull me aside to a different room and quiz me. What color are their eyes? That was my mom's training course to get me to be good at eye contact, because I guess I used to be stupid and not look at people when they talked. But I remember that kind of backfired because I'd be so focused on memorizing their eyes that I wouldn't pay attention to what they were saying. Hi Jaden, how are you? Alright, loser, I've got a quiz to take. Now that I've got 20 years of aced eye quizzes under my belt, I'm an eye contact wizard. I graduated top of my class in eye contact. I've got eye contact master's degrees. Well, every once in a while, some people make me nervous and I get shy. But other than that, I'm an eye contact powerhouse. I realized more recently that I think sometimes I go overboard and just end up staring at people by accident, and it's very weird, and I'm sorry at everyone. My mom would also be really strict on me saying pardon all the time instead of what. Like, she would say something I didn't hear and I'd go, what? And she'd stick her head around with, pardon? I wouldn't be a bimbo and be all, what? It's not like I was being a rude moron. One time my friend told me, Jaden, I think you're the only person I know that says pardon. And like, that's all fine and dandy. I could respect my mom's request to use an underused polite word. But I can't. Because she's even worse. This is what she does. Mom, did you put my book somewhere? Huh? Objectively speaking, a what is exponentially better than a huh? I started mocking her whenever she did it, and then she gradually stopped bothering me about saying pardon. Also, I realized I never told you that I had a lisp as a kid. My parents meme on me about it all the time, and a running joke in the family came from when I used to be babysat by my mom's friend, who's Italian. Which means she'd talk like this and have her house full of a spaghetti, and oh mamma mia. I'm only half joking. She's very Italian. Yahoo! She would make pasta for me all the time, and whenever she would ask what I wanted for lunch, I would pathetically go, pasta with no sauce! I wanted pasta with no sauce. And now, if my family would be having pasta for dinner, someone would end up going, I don't have a lisp anymore. Sometimes it shines through when I talk too fast or get sloppy with my words, but somehow I fixed it by myself. In first grade, we were learning about letter pronunciation, and when we got to S, the teacher explained that some kids say S with their tongue, when it's actually supposed to be behind your teeth. And I was like, oh. So I stopped doing it. Cured. Who knew that if you've got a speech impediment or some sort of hindrance or obstruction in your life, just stop it. Simple. You've got cancer. No, it's okay. Just stop it. When I was learning how to swim, my mom and her friend, who also had a daughter my age, hired a swim instructor for us. And I don't remember a single thing about it, except that she made us hang off the edge of the pool and just shimmy across the side. But I was terrified of these filters against the side and always refused to go across them because I was scared of being sucked in or something. I don't know how I passed that class because I refused to do the exercise. But at least I knew her eyes were blue. And then at the end of each lesson, she'd give us a piece of licorice, like we were dogs. I didn't like licorice. Oh yeah, and also this one time, I almost drowned and died. So my parents were having a bunch of their friends over, who also had kids, for a pool party. There were a handful of pool toys, like blow-up dolphins and beach balls, but we also had this floating foam mat. I was doofing off doing my own thing, and at one point when I was underwater, the mat drifted over top of me. When I had to go up for air, I hit the bottom of the mat, and I was like, uh-oh. Time for advanced critical problem solving. So if this mat is over top of me, I can't get up to the surface to breathe. So what do I do? I got it. I'll simply become a child Hercules and lift 3 6-year-olds from underwater into the air with my twig arms. Rather than using one of my four brain cells and swimming 2 feet to the side away from the mat, I decided to try and just bench press my way to survival. One of the adults realized I was being an idiot and also dying, and instead of being like, well, survival of the fittest, he dove in and saved me. So I didn't end up drowning of stupidity. Thank you, Mr. Chad. And now I'm here, on my own, moved to California, in my own place, not dead at the bottom of a pool, staring at everyone. Being honest, I love my family so much, and they've done so much for me. It takes a lot of effort to raise a person. Just think about how helpless and stupid babies are when they start out. They can't do anything. You can just put a baby on the ground and do nothing. Just leave it alone, and it'll just... pathetic. I'm so thankful and lucky my family's so supportive about everything I've been able to do, because I know not a lot of parents are like that. They even helped me sell merch at VidCon. They were so happy about it too. They came up to me after every day like, oh my gosh, Jaden, everyone's so wonderful. The people who watch your videos are so sweet. Someone asked me to sign their shirt, so I just wrote Jaden's mom. I was really nervous to pursue this career path because it can be a bit unpredictable, but the fact that they're so proud and encouraging has helped me do so much more than I ever would have thought I could if I was alone. So thanks, Mom and Dad. Brown, Hazel. So I just got back from VidCon Australia, and I wanted to say that that was amazing. I've never been upside down before. I was on a few panels with some friends like James and Jezza and Maz, and got to meet a bunch of really amazing, nice people. Maz, Jezza, and I were in the opening show, and I ended up having to draw a wombat with my elbows, which was very difficult, especially since I didn't know what a wombat looked like. If you want to see that, you can check it out on Jezza's channel. He posted that whole thing. I got to hold a snake and pet a kangaroo. It was kind of cold and windy and rainy, but I also got to meet an owl and a whole bunch of you. Just a really overall great experience. I am so appreciative that you guys like my stuff. I also wanted to update you that my shop manager and I are working on a new shop relaunch. We weren't content with the old one and wanted to make better stuff, so there's a bunch of new products and much more really cool things coming, like, I don't know, maybe a little Ari bag. I don't know. Oh, jeez. Link is in the description if you want to check it out. Thanks for watching. I really mean it. I'm excited to start pushing for more video improvements and just get a bunch of really cool stuff done. Okay, it's getting really hot in this closet. See you later. Bye. Thanks for everything. I love you.
So, this is a weird video to follow up with after I just talked about how much I don't like reading for like 7 minutes. But I guess it kind of works out because since you've obviously seen that video, right? We don't have to talk about my tragic reading backstory that's left me in soul-crushing shambles. So what book could someone like me, who's been forever ruined from the past haunting memories of reading, call a favorite? Harry Potter? Lord of the Rings? Grapes of Wrath? Nope. None of these revolting pieces of literature hold a candle to the masterpiece. Leave It to Pet, The Misadventures of a Recycled Super Robot. Is this a joke? I'm not sure yet. I read this book in sixth grade when I was 11, and I'll preface it with, yes, it's a manga. Do I want to get into the debate if manga, comic books, or graphic novels are considered real books? I don't think so. I don't actually remember how I stumbled onto this book. I remember owning it, so it might have been a gift from my parents or a friend, but your guess is as good as mine. We can say it's a gift from the Lord. Leave It to Pet, The Misadventures of a Recycled Super Robot, is about this 9-year-old boy, Noboru, who recycled an orange juice bottle. The recycling plant wanted to say thanks for recycling and sent this little bottle robot called Pet to rescue him whenever he needs help or is in danger. Sounds great, but the catch is, Pet is actually trash. Just kidding. Pet's childish, easily distracted, and overly confident in his abilities, which results in him making situations comedically worse and not being able to fix anything. Also, I don't know if you picked up on this, but this is not a high reading level book. Don't make fun of me for liking it. The book starts off with Pet introducing himself as Noboru and his friends are being picked on by bullies. But when he arrives to save the day, no one understands what Pet is or is supposed to do or why he's here. Obviously. What would you do if this thing walks up and starts talking to you? So Pet explains, I'm the orange juice bottle you recycled the other day. And Noboru's like, I don't know what you're talking about. And Pet's like, I can't believe you don't remember. Freak. and the dynamic grows from there. There's not really a specific story. It's more episodic chapters where the characters are in different everyday scenarios that just get a little out of hand. And Pat, of course, is being a little bag of trash, complicating things that should have been an easy fix or weren't even problems to begin with. Chapter 7 is a good one. Nabor is out fishing with his friends and his line is caught on some rocks, so he calls for Pet. Leave it to Pet, what seems to be the problem? And as Nabor is explaining, Pet gets overpowered by the current. Not a problem. It's like it never happened. Pet assesses the situation. I see your hook is stuck at the bottom of the river. Ka-ching! Ka-ching! I know exactly what to do. Whoosh! And he cuts the line off. Nabor is like, what the heck, dude? And Pet's like, what, you wanted that old thing? And he's like, yes, of course I wanted it. More characters are introduced later on, but my favorites are P2, where in his debut, when he's describing how he's the new and improved Pet model, with his 200% faster speed, larger body, but lighter weight. He blows away because he's so light, and Pet's all, dang, that's awesome, and explodes off his arms and legs to try and be lighter too. I wish humans could do that. Also, Bottle Doggy is a great character. He drags his limp body around on a leash. I think the reason I love this book so much is, frankly, a lot of nostalgia. Not sure a 20-something-year-old would pick this up and deeply connect with Bottle Doggy's character arc. But the author, Sonishi Kenji, also created, in my opinion, a really cute little knucklehead I just want to have in my life. And 11-year-old me was obsessed with. Pet became one of my favorite characters for a bit, and I would draw him all the time. In class, we had our desks arranged in groups, and I had a bit of open space on the side because my desk was on the corner. So I drew a little Pet and stuck him on the side for the world to see how much of a stan I was. No one cared. Why are you drawing orange juice? I would make my own little original characters of bottle robots that I would want. I believe the original term might be trash Sona, and recycled extra things in hopes I could have my own Pet. I was really big on imagination and stuff as a kid, so anything that played around with enhancing reality and fun in creative ways was right up my alley. And it taught me how to recycle, so you're welcome, Greta Thunberg. I don't think I've ever heard anyone talk about this book. Ever? It seems like it slipped under the radar for some reason. And I think it deserves more love because the humor in it was suitable for 11-year-old me, and I bought the book to read through again, and the humor is still suitable for me. So either it's fun for all ages, or I haven't mentally progressed since grade 6. Of course, naturally, there's nothing wrong with having things targeted towards certain age groups, but I think there should just be more things like Pet, The Misadventures of a Recycled Super Robot. Bringing families and people of all ages together with his charm, froggy hat, and massive glistening samurai muscles. I'm telling you, there's something in here for everyone. Sure, the story is pretty simple, but the humor, which I always value the most, is great for all ages and doesn't try to dumb anything down to baby younger readers. I think it's easy to think kids are children until they're not, but they're still people and can tell when they're being talked down to. Now go file your taxes, pathetic little boy. Anyway, I just really like the book. It's cute, funny. Pet reminds me of Ari if Ari was a recycled super robot made from an orange juice bottle. You can read the whole thing in like 20 minutes, if not faster. If I were to critique one thing, I wasn't too keen on how they kept introducing new recycled robots, and the crew just started getting a bit too crowded by the end, in my opinion. I liked when it was just a few characters, and would have liked to see them play around with more ideas instead of just bringing in a new character to depend on new ideas for. But Bottle Doggy was a masterpiece. He can stay. There's actually 3 other books that come after it, but I haven't read them because I'm worried that they won't be as good, and I want to remember Pet as the example of perfect literature it is. Are there hundreds of books that I would probably enjoy more than this one if I gave a chance? Yes. But am I still gonna end the video without giving a reasonable explanation for me not trying to find them? Yep.
Hey again, it's me. Thanks for watching the video. I wanted to say thank you to everyone who stopped by the charity live stream the other day. I was blown away the entire stream. And you can probably tell by the fact I couldn't get myself to do anything the first 30 minutes because I was so blindsided with support. If you missed it, I was hoping to raise $30,000 and we raised $260,000 in 4 hours. So thank you to everyone who was there, participated, donated, everything. And thanks to Sean for putting it all together. I had fun, and wow, you guys are just amazing. But don't let it go to waste. Make sure you still stay inside, stay quarantined, wash your hands, everything. We're all in it together. Anyway, thanks for watching my video about a recycled orange juice.
Hey everyone! So I've been in college for a while now, and I'm really enjoying it actually. I've met some great people and made some really awesome friends. Anyway, so everything's been going good, but knowing me, I've had my share of stupid disasters. I had this class, Intro to Computer Model Design. We typically just had weekly projects in Photoshop, Illustrator, a few other programs. The schedule was normally every Thursday, we would have to go to the classroom at 6 p.m. and turn in our assignment from that week. Now I've heard from other students that the professor is actually really strict on the turn-in window. You have 10 minutes after 6 p.m. to turn it in, and that's it. Got there at 6:11? Tough luck, buddy, you're late. Go get your life together. No mercy. I got my project done a few days early, trying to be all good and stuff. Dang, look how on top of things I am. Yeah, all I had to do was print it out. The printing lab is close to the classroom, so I figured I'd just go before I turn in my assignment, print it out, and save myself the extra trip. I have a friend down the hall that also had the class, and she asked if she could use my computer to do her project since she didn't have Photoshop. It wasn't a problem for me, so she came in around 3 p.m. on the Thursday, giving her a good 3-hour window to complete the assignment, which at the time we thought was reasonable. So we were hanging out, she was working on the project, I decided to use the time to organize my papers and stuff. Wow, Jaden, so productive! I know, I'm basically a full-on adult now, using my time wisely and crap. All of a sudden, we look over at the time, and it's freaking 5:45. Now, the building the class is in is already a good 5-minute walk away. I still had to get my thing printed. My friend wasn't even done. Panic! We started rushing around in just blind confusion of what to even do with ourselves. She had to cut it short and leave some things out just to have something to turn in, and we both ran out to get to the printing lab. We were almost out of the building when I realized I forgot to grab the title paper, which is something that you had to staple to the assignment. I told her not to wait for me, and I ran back to the room to grab it. Except I reorganized everything, and I didn't know where I put it. Pause. Don't you hate that? We've all been there. You decide to be good and use your time to reorganize and be productive. Wow, look how great I am making wise decisions. My parents are raising such a great little angel child. Oh wait, where did I put that one thing that was always laying right next to the water bottle? I don't know where it is anymore because everything was always in the same mess, but I still knew where things were. And now that it's all clean, I don't know where I put it. Yeah, that just happened. I just tore everything open to find the freaking little title paper. I ended up just making everything more unorganized and messy than when I started, so that's negative productivity right there. I finally found the stupid paper, and at that moment, my neighbor actually stopped by to say hi. I was so late at that point, all I could say was, "Hi, can't talk, super late, close my door, okay, bye!" I never thought I would get to the point in my life that I was so late I couldn't even close a door. I'm impressed even with myself. As I was running out, I got a quick glance at the time. 6 p.m. Shit! I full-on just sprinted to the building. In my head, I'm just thinking, there's absolutely no way I can make it. Literally no possible way. Oh my god. Oh my god. Should be going to the gym. I burst into the printing lab and like smashed my flash drive into the computer. My friend was also there, but she was having computer file issues. Great, everyone's getting screwed over today. I got my thing printed and stole one more time check. 6:10. Jesus, sonic mode freaking engage. I ran into the lecture room. I was sweaty, my lungs hurt, my legs hurt, everything hurt. I was going through mental shock. The teacher looked up and said, "Turning in your project?" Yeah, I nodded. "Run." Okay. I actually managed to get the assignment turned in on time. Oh my god, that was a rush. I walked out and sat down on a little bench. I was still freaking hyped up on adrenaline and stress and emotional trauma. At that point, I didn't even know if my friend was able to turn in her project because she was still trying to print things as I left. Turns out, she actually was able to get it done, but she got some hardcore death glares from the teacher for being like 26 seconds late. So yeah, I'd say college is going pretty well. Hey guys, thanks for watching. I know it's been a while since I uploaded again. Don't forget to follow me on my social medias if you want to see my stupid jokes and updates and stuff. Make sure you like the video, subscribe, blah blah blah, all that outro stuff. Also, I have a little surprise. A few of my friends wanted to say hi to you all real quick, so I'm gonna introduce them to you. They're all super awesome, and I love them. Anyway, again, thanks for watching, and I'll see you all later. Bye!
Hi, my name is Adam, and I met Jaden last semester while at college. Since then, we've been hanging out every day, and she's become one of my best friends. I hope you guys like this video, and I'm glad I got to say hi to you. Bye!
Hi, I'm Taylor. I'm friends with Jaden, and I was also the person who ran with her to the class because we were late. Thanks for watching.
Yo, it's Brian. I stick forks in trees. Jaden and I are BFFs. Out.
Hi, I'm Jerry. I go to school with Jaden for musical theater, and Jaden is like the Asian sister I never had. Hope you guys like the video. See ya.
Hey, I'm Gwen. I live next door to Jaden. She lets me steal her forks and sit in her beanbag chair. Also, John sucks. Hope you guys like the video. Bye.
Hey, fellas. I'm John. I'm in the piano performance program. Jaden is probably my favorite girl, second only to my terrible girlfriend, Gwen. Goodbye.
Hey, I'm Mitchell. I'm an architecture major. I mainly hang out in Jaden's room just because of her big beanbag and her dope tapestries. But she's pretty tight. Bye.
Hi, I'm Ben. I met Jaden the first semester. Mainly, I just bully her and steal her food. But yeah, she's aight.
Hey, I'm Riss. I'm Jaden's neighbor, and I like to steal her spoons because we never have any. Yeah, thanks, Jaden.
Hi, my name's Aaron. I'm an architecture major, and I met Jaden the first semester. I used to hang out in her room until she kicked me out because I sit in her chair too much. Okay, bye.
Hi, I'm Latavia, and I'm Jaden's roommate, and Jaden's pretty awesome. So, thanks for watching Jaden Animation.
Hi, I'm Kevin. I'm a fashion major. I met Jaden way back. She's pretty cool. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Matt. I am a art tech major. See, I met Jaden by wandering up to the fourth floor and seeing an open door and just walking in.
It's good enough.
Say bye.
Goodbye.
Hey, it's me, Chris. Hey. Alright, bye.
Yeah, go. Genshin Impact needs no introduction. It's taken the gaming sphere by storm since being published in 2020, is enjoyed by millions of players all over the globe, and even if you've never played Genshin Impact before, you've definitely heard about it. Up until this video, I was in the heard about it but didn't know anything about it category. Not for any particular reason, I kinda just don't do anything ever. I don't know why, I should probably figure that out, it might be a therapy thing. As I was sitting on the floor, barely existing one day, Genshin Impact themselves suddenly reached out. Hi, Jaden. I see you're up to your usual nothingness. How about we pay you to play Genshin Impact? Okay, so yep, this video is surprisingly sponsored by Genshin Impact. My first sponsor on this channel. Wow, are you proud of me, parents? No, please don't go. I'm being paid to play Genshin Impact, but it's still gonna be a good video and experience. Here, watch, I'll prove it. I'm talking to Paimon, my spirit companion that I see all over my Twitter feed, about my past. Yeah, I was literally just minding my business traveling from world to world with my sister, when all of a sudden some sustainer of heavenly principles goddess appeared, absorbed my sister with cubes, and chained me to this land. Biggest hater I've ever seen. Yeah, that's crazy. Anyway, thanks for saving me from drowning in the ocean. As we walk and talk, a bunch of little critters are scurrying around. Of course, I was scooping up all of them. The ecosystem was definitely starting to crumble with me on this planet now, I'll tell you that much. Let nature flourish? Nah, it's all going into my inventory. To live is to hoard. As I'm chasing a squirrel around the lush forest, we discover a mysterious statue in the middle of a glistening pond. Oh, hello, great wind god. Maybe this isn't the time to have 12 lizards stuffed in my pockets. I'm suddenly granted mystical powers by the statue, and can now see the map. The city of Mondstadt is close by, so we decided to head over there to see if anyone knows anything about my lost sister. But while walking, we ended up stumbling into a strange bard talking to a dragon. That's
not my sister. Unfortunately for everyone, I have a little magic hiccup, which gets us caught, and both the bard and dragon scatter. Closer to Mondstadt, we run into Amber, a knight who warns us that a dragon called Storm Terror, an awesome name, has been terrorizing the town lately. She then joins our party to lead us to safety, which is crazy because I thought you had to spend money to get girls to join your party in this game, but this one just joined us for free. In Mondstadt, Amber then gives us a wind glider. Woo! Flying! I take a running leap off the side of a building to try out my new wings when suddenly the dragon shows up and spawns a bunch of tornadoes all over the town, catapulting me into the air. With a full view of the dragon, I do what any sane person would in that scenario. Storm Terror ends up fleeing, and as a reward for shooing him off, I'm introduced to basically the protectors of Mondstadt. I'm Jean, the acting Grand Master of the Knights of Favonius. Kaya. Very impressive going up against a dragon. You're hot. They take me to various temples, crushing these dragon's breath crystals that apparently gave Storm Terror power. I was just happy to be smashing rocks, though, and some random moth guy that probably has significance but he's dead now, so. As the group was talking amongst each other about important stuff like what to do next to ensure the safety of the townspeople, I wandered off and kind of started doing my own thing. Helped some people, did some cooking, fought for my life against some hyper-aggressive and pissed animal hypostasis Rubik's Cube boss named Beth I accidentally stumbled into, which definitely didn't take me way too long to defeat. Fed some ducks. I then found the bard from earlier doing a guitar solo for the town. He introduces himself as Venti and tells about how him and Storm Terror, whose real name is Dvalin, used to be friendly before it was attacked and poisoned by another dragon, leaving him bitter and angry. Venti essentially says, I can fix him. Do you want to commit a burglary with me? Yes. With a freshly stolen holy lyre, we were able to summon Dvalin, who pulled a bit of a tsundere and was like, if you really cared about me, then you'd come to my castle. But you probably won't because you hate me, don't you? You hate me and want me dead. I just can't do anything right. No! Dvalin, come back! Listen to this sick riff I made. Bada bing, bada boom, we entered his lair and started fighting him in a swirling vortex. No, take your time. The dragon eventually falls, we purify him, and the day is saved. Yippee! Happy dragon, happy Mondstadt, happy... Wait, I was supposed to find my sister, not fight a dragon. Even though I'm riding the high of saving all these people and a dragon and being awesome, I head off to Fontaine to continue my journey. The town sits on the edge of a cliff, sparkling waterfalls pouring off the sides around it, framed perfectly by the mountains behind. Wow, what a beautiful town. Is that girl about to jump off the cliff? The water will rise and eventually drown everyone here, leaving our Hydro Archon to sit weeping on her throne for all eternity. Hi, twin sister! Oh, sorry, did I interrupt you talking about the prophecy where everyone in Fontaine is born within sin and one day we will all dissolve in the waters? That's a classic. Come see our magic show. The magic twins, Linny and Lynette, decide to take us to the opera house. But on the way there, we're actually stopped by the Hydro Archon herself, Farina. Welcome, travelers, to my city of Fontaine. Everyone, give them a warm welcome. They're fierce and noble warriors who have done much good for the land and its people. Hey, thanks. It's really nothing. We just tamed a giant dragon. Actually, I hereby declare the traveler under arrest for having a flying object, which is illegal. What? She's not even... Paimon doesn't count because she's a balloon. Yeah, Paimon's my balloon. Ha! All right, that's funny. Case dismissed. Later. So, can we ride the Aquabus? Yippee! We get to the opera house and the magic show begins. Everything is going well, but as Linny was about to do a trick where he swaps boxes with a random audience member, a giant water tank falls onto the box, obliterating it. Oh my god, we killed my assistant Cowell? Why is he here and not the audience member? Speaking of which, where is she? A murder mystery plus disappearance case was now in place, with everyone looking at Linny as the prime suspect. Dude, this is getting good. A man died. Everyone starts trying to be a hero and chime in on the court case where some guy died in quite possibly one of the most Looney Tune ways possible. But I can't really be bothered at this point and go outside to jump into the ocean. Using my new diving skills, I was able to explore the whole world the water had to offer. I was actually shocked when I first saw it because of how gorgeous it was. I don't know why the people of Fontaine are scared of these waters. It's awesome down here. It's because they die. After just swimming around and finding little secrets and treasures, I decided it was time to start fighting the fish. Yep, it was time to square up. Fish have had it too good for too long. Hold this uppercut. Eventually, everyone yanked me out of the water and dragged me back to the opera house to act as Linny's defense lawyer, even though I have no credentials and literally saw him squash a guy with a fish tank. Linny couldn't have killed Cowell because... Cowell killed Cowell! Dude, she's right! What?! Everyone is freaking out at this point because somehow Cowell actually was the murderer and had a secret plan to dissolve people in water. I don't know, it was a lot of adults talking in big words. I was just thinking about punching fish the whole time. Next thing I know, people are shaking my hand and congratulating me on a case closed. Even Farina is like, excellent job, Jaden. You're a funny one. Thank you, Farina. Even though you've been trying to take me to court and put me in jail for your own entertainment, you're also a funny one. I hope your people don't drown. With that, the trial is adjourned and I'm released from my forced upon lawyer duties, left to finally explore the world to my heart's content. There's so many more quests and stories to uncover in the game, also a lot of lore, so if you're a big theory head, proceed at your own risk. I enjoyed the time I spent playing Genshin Impact and was surprised at how beautiful the visuals and music are. It's overall just a well-developed game that's pretty to look at. I got immersed in the world and spent hours exploring to find little secrets and bosses and treasures. Thank you again to Genshin Impact for reaching out and sponsoring this video because I had a great time learning about the universe you all created. If you're interested in playing the open world action RPG game that is Genshin Impact yourself, then ladies and gentlemen, if you would please look under your seats, you'll find... I meant to say the description of this video. If you look in the description, you can click the link to download it for free. Yep, I said it already, but I'm saying it again. Genshin Impact is free to download. You can have zero money in your bank account and still get to play it. As long as you have at least a PC, mobile device, PS4, or PS5 to play the game on in the first place. In battle, you control elements like Kairo, Dendro, Pyro, Hydro, Anemo, Electro, Geo, and when combined strategically, you can deal devastating elemental damage to your opponent. By the way, if you think you've spoiled the game's story for yourself by watching this video, you've never been more wrong in your life. There's so many more towns, quests, stories. Don't worry, trust me, there's plenty left for you to explore. As someone that wants to 100% the games I play as much as possible, I feared for my mind, body, and soul when I realized how much content there was waiting for me. Genshin Impact actually just released a new 4.2 update that includes new characters and even an entirely new storyline for Fontaine. There's a bunch of new events that let you play different kinds of minigames to win rewards. You got to meet her a little bit in the video already, but Farina is a huge new character in this update as you continue the next part of the Archon stories. Fontaine as a whole is also expanding by introducing new environments, boss ascension materials, and local specialties for Farina. It's an ever-changing and growing game that has a lot of passion put into it, and if any of this sounds up your alley, why not give it a try? I mean, the link's right there. Might as well just click it. Huge thanks to the team for all their work on this video. They're beasts, they're machines, they're incredible. A while ago we brought on a bunch new people, and this is the first video I'm posting that they've worked on, so make sure to perceive them. All their links are in the description as well. I wouldn't be able to be doing the things I'm doing without them. They're so awesome. Thanks for watching my first main channel sponsored video. It's not gonna become a common thing, but it was cool to give it a try. Alright, see you later. Music is a huge part of our society. It brings people together, lets you express yourself in new and creative ways, can even help you get through tough times. Personally, for me, I don't get it. I'm sorry, I've honestly never been a big music person. I know, throw me into a volcano. I would just rather watch YouTube videos. I don't know, I like the constant flashing colors and pictures, I think. Like, I don't hate music. For the most part, I could honestly listen to anything, but that's kinda it, you know? Nothing stands out to me and I don't go out of my way to listen to it. If anyone out there is like me, you understand the pain of when a conversation starts turning towards the topic of music. You know exactly what's coming, and you're helpless
us to stop it. There's nothing you can do. It's already in motion. The person you're talking to opens their mouth and you wince as they say it. So what kind of music do you listen to? Oh, I don't really listen to music. Like, not at all. Nah, maybe like some video game music every once in a while, but that's kind of it. Damn, that's crazy. Yeah. And after that conversational stumbling, the person starts talking about the music they like, and you have to stand there and take it. Oh, that sounds cool. I should give it a listen. You're just lying through your teeth, not being convinced in the slightest, and will immediately forget every piece of information they tried to feed you. Even if I wanted to look it up later, my brain goes, get this out of here immediately. We've got to make room for the 4-hour-long video essay about Freddy Fazbear. Basically, I don't connect to music the way the majority of people do, and no one, including me, is happy about it. Look, I've tried to contribute in my own way, but no one else listens to the Mario Kart Cheese Land theme in their free time. It's good, no one believes me. Now, on a completely unrelated note, a while ago I wanted to get into a hobby that was fun and active at the same time, because I do not move if not incentivized to. And that's not good. I'd like to still be fully functional at the age of 30. So after a bit of soul searching and digging around in the old ideas jar, I decided to try out DDR. I got a dance pad, downloaded some fun video game songs and anime intros to Dance Dance Revolution 2, and I got really into it. It was the most active I've been since high school. I was doing cardio for hours on end. Who am I? After playing my batch of custom songs for a few months, I decided to download some more stuff. And that's when I casually thought to myself, I wonder if there's any good Vocaloid charts. Now to start a completely new tangent again, Vocaloid is a voice synthesizer program, yada yada yada. Basically, it's robot voices you can control to write songs, and there's different characters based on what voice you use. The most common example, you know her, you love her, is Hatsune Miku. Yep, strap in folks, we're finally talking about Hatsune Miku, my beloved. My history with Hatsune Miku is a bit all over the place. I first got really into her in high school. I don't remember exactly how, but I probably just stumbled onto some of her popular songs while browsing YouTube one day. Either way, I was obsessed, and that was the first instance of me actually listening to music, which, as you know, was groundbreaking. I loved Hatsune Miku so much that in my senior year of English class, the teacher told us to write a PowerPoint presentation about anything we wanted. Most kids talked about, like, ending racism or recycling or something like that, but I decided my presentation was gonna be about our girl, Hatsune Miku. You know, just as morally important as ending racism and preventing global warming. Of course, I disguised it as a presentation about, are hologram concerts gonna be the future of live music? But it was really just an excuse to gush about Miku because I desperately needed that outlet. I was a lonely child. Honestly, I'm not even sure how I mustered up the courage to do that presentation in the first place, because as the shy art girl who never talked to or hung out with anyone, it was a bold choice for me to talk about something considered so strange and nerdy at the time. I started my presentation and immediately was like, oh my god, what the hell am I doing talking about a holographic Japanese pop icon in front of my normie-ass classmates? I regret every moment I didn't stop myself from getting right here. After playing Miku's viral World is Mine performance for the class, one of the, like, popular girls was like, that was cool, can we watch another? And I thought she was making fun of me, so I just sat back down. As much as I loved Miku back then, my anxiety got the better of me, and I slowly drifted away from her because I didn't want to feel like a social outcast. It's a dog-eat-dog world when you're a teenager, and you know it. We were all just trying to survive out there. I'm sorry, Miku, I was weak. Fast forward to current Jaden. I've grown up a bit, and more sure of myself, learned some life lessons. I'm not surrounded by self-conscious teenagers 24/7. I'm now sitting here in front of my computer screen with a choice. Should I choose to yet again repress myself from pursuing a niche and uncommon interest because of self-conscious fears? Or am I gonna choose self-healing and growth and allow myself to fully re-explore the world of a Japanese virtual pop star to play DDR2? Crank up that Miku. I started downloading songs I listened to years ago, found some new ones, I was exploring and already getting more and more into the music I chose to leave behind out of fear years ago. I was flourishing. And that's how it began. I didn't know it back then, but this was the first step of a hyperfixation like no other I've experienced. Hatsune Miku was showing me the ways of truly enjoying music. I was playing her whenever I was in the car, consistently looking up new songs and artists artists to add to my playlist, even listening to her while I work or play video games, which I pretty much never did. My world was changing. And it was all hers. This wasn't just the music either, it was straight up about Hatsune Miku. I've never been a figure collector, but I started buying so many Miku figures I had to get a custom shelf in my office just to display them all. Dude, it's such a double-edged sword to be into Miku, because the fanbase is constantly being fed. New Miku this, new Miku that, gorgeous figures are coming out like every month. What am I supposed to do, not buy them? Every house needs to have at least one Miku. That's a feng shui rule. Also, a huge oversight on my part, when I got my Miku shelf installed, I wanted it above my computer. It turned out great and displays them really well, but when I'm actually sitting at my desk and want to look up and admire my figures, all I see is accidental upskirt shots and I feel so bad. I'm sorry, Miku, I'm not trying to disrespect you, I promise. It was a miscalculation on my part. So whenever I'm at my desk, I just don't look up. As most of you probably know, Pokemon invited Jacob and me to Japan to attend the Pokemon World Championships back in August. That was super fun, and the video of that trip should be up by now if I'd planned things correctly. If not, then oops. But Worlds also just so happened to overlap with Magical Mirai, also known as one of the biggest Hatsune Miku expos and concerts ever. We had to go. Since getting super into Miku, it became one of my biggest dreams to see her live in concert. Who knows if we'd ever get this perfect of an opportunity again? What if she invites me backstage and we became friends? I immediately tried to get tickets, but couldn't figure out how the Japanese ticket system worked, so Emily ended up having to help me out. She was also the one who told me about the concert in the first place, so thank you, Emily, my hero, my savior. We got tickets. But not actually, because if you don't know, the way Japan does most of their online ticket systems is through a gacha. Yeah, random lottery. No matter how much money I was willing to hypothetically spend to get these tickets, at the end of the day, we were all just like those little numbered balls in that bingo spinner thing. Months pass as I eagerly await our fate. Then the email pops up in my inbox. I click it, scanning it way too quickly to understand any of the contents until my eyes catch it. Successfully obtained tickets. We're gonna see Miku! Suddenly life had color again. This is what living feels like. Air tasted more pure. The sun was smiling, beaming even. I smiled back for the first time. Something smelled like toast. You have no idea how excited I was. I don't even understand why I love Hatsune Miku as much as I do, but she has become one of the pillars of my being. Let's jump to the day of the concert. Jacob and I are in Japan and are just about to arrive at the convention center. I remember looking out the window of the taxi, getting so excited to see people wearing their Miku shirts and kimonos, and they had Miku bags. I felt like I was finally around my people. We get there, walk into the convention center, and a blast of Hatsune Miku hits us. Giant Miku statues and posters, booths stocked with Miku merchandise, almost everyone dressed head to toe in Miku clothes. I saw people with Hatsune Miku suitcases to hold all the Miku things they were buying. I immediately wanted to run around and look at everything all at once. There were multiple times where Jacob lost me because I just started walking off in different directions like a Miku moth. We spent a few hours looking around and buying things. We spent a lot of money, but eventually we started getting ready for the live concert. I was giddy with excitement at this point. She was gonna be right in front of me. We found our seats and, dude, we were pretty damn close to the stage, especially for randomly selected seats. I couldn't believe how close we were gonna be to Hatsune Miku. I already knew going into it I was gonna cry frame one. If you didn't know, it's pretty standard to have special Miku glow sticks you can shake to the beat of whichever song is playing. You can even switch them to the coordinated color of whichever Vocaloid was on stage at the time. I've only learned about it from watching videos of concerts on YouTube thus far, and I gotta say, it was so fun to see people before the show warming up their arms and practicing their glow stick moves. They really take Hatsune Miku seriously, and I respect it so much. Some people were even quadruple wielding glow sticks. The record I personally saw was 6, like some sort of Miku Wolverine. It was a huge bummer though, because Jacob and I tried to buy some sticks of our own at the expo hall, but they were already sold out, so we didn't have any. and it was kind of embarrassing. Soon enough, the Miku songs the venue was playing started getting louder, and the house lights dimmed, and man, seeing the lights turn down and the teal glow of all the sticks emanating together to light up the room, honestly, it made me tear up. I don't even think I realized how much I loved Hatsune Miku until that moment, being completely surrounded by people who love her just as much and more than I do. This is what it's like to be into music, isn't it? To experience these moments being completely engulfed in a community, all connected by a single art. I get it now. It's beautiful. The room glowed Miku blue and everyone was cheering and shaking their glow sticks, anticipating her appearance. All the Vocaloids were introduced one by one with text on the hologram screen. Meiko, Luca, Kaito, Kagamina Rin, and Len. And then, Hatsune Miku. The crowd went ballistic. I could already feel myself holding back tears. A little digital poof explosion goes off. And there she was, right in front of us. She started singing and Jacob and I were cheering and bouncing with the rest of the crowd. By the time she got a couple songs in, Jacob and I were definitely feeling left out for not having the glow sticks to shake. So we pulled out our Miku plushes to use in place of them, and that felt much better. By the end of the concert, Jacob was even dual wielding Mikus. After a few songs, Miku disappeared and the other Vocaloids played some of their songs. I honestly don't know them as well, so I wasn't too familiar with most of the songs they all played, but I was having a great time nonetheless. It was nice to not be fighting tears the whole time anymore as well. Then Miku came back and the concert continued on and we learned some real nice glow stick moves, replaced with our Miku plushes, of course. There's the classic arm cheer on beat, the on beat off beat, the building cheer on to beat, even throw in the advanced building cheer on to double beat with a height. I'll say it, doing all those glow stick movements was honestly a really crazy arm workout. Like, we were working biceps and shoulders for 2 hours straight. Imagine Beat Saber, but higher up in the posture with almost no breaks. And if you don't commit, then Hatsune Miku thinks you hate her. I wanted to mention that in Vocaloid concerts, obviously they have a recording of the vocals, because, you know. But all the other instruments were absolutely real. There was a live band playing all the songs for the entire set. In the middle of the concert, there was even a nice little appreciation moment showcasing all the band members by name, accompanied by a little solo they got to play. I'm a big bass fan and would love to learn how to play it one day. And I know bass players get super neglected because everyone wants to watch the cool guitar players. So I gave extra attention to the Miku bass player. They definitely noticed me cheering for them, probably because I could tell everyone was watching the guitar players and I was the only one actually looking at them. And the bass player smiled super wide and raised his bass to me. And I just thought that was a nice moment. Appreciate your bass players, guys. They need it. Anyway, the concert went on. There were awesome lasers and sparklers, fun costume changes from all the Vocaloids, great set list. Shout out to the guy in front of us that was there with his girlfriend and definitely more excited to be there than she was. Finally, it came to the encore. We had to convince Miku to play one more song. You know how, at least in America, people are cheering and screaming for an encore? Well, Japan is like so quiet and polite. They were saying it like a suggestion. It was so quiet. Kind of just a long session of applause with a whisper of Miku. Miku. Like, if I were Hatsune Miku, I would have questioned if they even wanted the encore in the first place. Also, we were asking for the encore for like 5 minutes straight. I was fully convinced she had left the building. But she came out for her last song. It was a blast. She was in her magical Mirai outfit for the year. And it was over. I've only gone to one other concert in my entire life, and it was because a friend in college had an extra ticket and invited me along. I didn't even know the band at the time, it was some random group called Fallout Boy or something. But I could have been to 1,000 concerts and still say this was the best one I've ever been to. I loved the energy, I loved how passionate and excited everyone was to be there, and I loved Hatsune Miku, and still do. I want to go to so many more of her concerts. It was a great event for me, and I want to relive it again and again. You might think it's weird, or you don't get it. It's just a hologram robot girl, right? That's totally fine. If you can't find it in Vocaloid, I hope everyone has the opportunity to connect with or find a community to enjoy like I have with Hatsune Miku, because moments like that concert are so incredible and I feel so lucky to have been there. I just want everyone to experience something like that in their lifetime.
Getting into Vocaloid can be a bit intimidating, so for anyone that wants to give Miku a try or is just looking for a playlist of some of my favorite Vocaloid songs, I'm putting a link to a Miku playlist I've made and actively listened to in the description and probably the comments too. If I can convert at least a few people into Miku fans, that's a win in my book. I hope you enjoy. I am off to apply for more tickets to another Miku concert. Bye-bye.
We all know those people, the few dim bulbs of the group. Now, they don't necessarily have to be called stupid, but their actions just make you go, ugh. Now, I'm fine with people not using the full extent of their brain cells to do things, but when their stupidity starts affecting me, then we're gonna start having some problems. The rule disregarder. Someone who either doesn't listen to rules or flat out ignores them. I had a class with this one person. I'm just gonna keep his identity a secret. I don't know what was wrong with him. He did lots of questionable things that made the class just shake their head. One time, he asked the teacher if he could use a pen to fill out a bubble test. And if you don't understand how bubble tests work, normally you get a bubble sheet, fill out a multiple choice test corresponding to the letters on the test, and the teacher gives the filled out forms to this machine and it grades the test a lot faster than the teacher can. But the machine only works when you fill it out with a number 2 pencil. Maybe the guy didn't know how they worked, so I guess it wasn't a bad question. But a few weeks later, when we had another test, it turns out the same guy used, yep, a pen to fill out his test. Really, guy? Really? And as the teacher was yelling at him for being so ignorant, it was noticed that he didn't even put his name on the test either. The advice ignore. When you give advice to someone, they ignore it, and they end up in this huge, problematic situation that you predicted perfectly and they could have avoided if they just took your advice from the beginning. Tori, do you think I should date Aaron or Jet? Aaron has had at least 24 girlfriends and he's cheated on all of them. I'd say Jet-
Oh my god, girl, wait!
Aaron just asked me out to the carnival tonight. I have to go with him. I'll see you later. Oh my god, Tori, Aaron bailed on me for some blondie blonde who isn't even hot. You have to come pick me up. Aaron was my only ride home and I'm getting heck away in the rain! The non-future planner. Someone who doesn't think of the consequences of their stupid actions before they make them. Once when I was in 4th grade, I was in the school bathroom and as I was walking down the little corridor to go into the stall, some girl randomly started yelling, I'm gonna kick the door open! And all of a sudden I heard this loud poof as one of the stall doors flew open at my face. Now luckily, I was a master of karate arts when I was little, so my reflexes were lightning fast, and I was actually able to block the door with my arm instead of my face. And I'm not gonna lie, I was pretty proud of myself because I've never done anything that amazing before. But, I mean, come on. If it wasn't me standing there and instead some, I don't know, poor little kindergartner who couldn't block the door if they tried, there could have been some major issues. I even had a pretty bad bruise on my arm from where I blocked it. Be ignorant. When someone doesn't pay attention to their surroundings, when they could be a hazard to something or themselves.
Jeff, where do you want these knives? Oh, hey Jeff, didn't see you there.
Don wanted them over by the cabinet over there.
Hey, Don! Jeff said you wanted these over there.
What? No, they're the knives you wanted.
Yeah.
You sure?
Okay, catch.
No? Okay, I'll sprint them over to you.
The important detail overlooker. Someone who is told important details and immediately forgets them. Okay, so for the party tomorrow, you said you can bake the cookies?
Yep. Do you want a specific kind?
Nope. I can eat everything but peanuts, so everything else you want is fine. Hey, glad you could make it. What did you bring?
Peanut butter cookies.
You want one? They're still warm. Hello? Back in April, Chikoa started teasing their newest project, Chikoa Park. Despite them not revealing any follow-up details at all, I was obviously frothing at the mouth. Over the next few months, information slowly started being unveiled until finally, teaser photos. Oh my god. Chikoa is real. I had to figure out how to go. But to anyone who knows how Japan works, you'd understand this is a much more difficult mission to accomplish than suggested, because practically everything is executed through randomized lotteries. You can't just camp a website and refresh 5 times a second in hopes of being the first to buy all the tickets to resell, like the barbaric ways of the West. You apply alongside 100,000 million people, then pray on your hands and knees to the gacha overlords, knowing you ultimately have no power in this world whatsoever. I lit my manifestation candles and let the overlords choose my fate when I secured tickets. Chikoa, thank you for shining your light down on me. I figured since I'm gonna be flying all the way back to Japan for the park, I might as well spend my time as surrounded by Chikoa as I can. So I ended up turning it into the most jam-packed Chikoa-themed trip I possibly could. Sarah, good friend and fellow Chikoa enjoyer, and I hopped on a plane and sped off to Tokyo to experience possibly the most obsessive yet exciting time of our lives. After landing, sleeping, and waking up bright and early, I was practically buzzing with excitement, knowing today was the day I was going to witness the most anticipated Chikoa event the franchise has created yet. Equipped to live through the most memorable day of my life, we headed off to the park. As we were driving, my head was still buzzing with questions about what the event was even gonna be like. The promotion of the whole thing had been super secretive. I really didn't know what to expect going into it. The car pulled up, and we were greeted by giant Chikoa and friends wrapped around the building. This is how I knew it was gonna be huge. Please prepare yourself. We walked through a very hypnotizing Chikoa portal that opened up to the welcoming first room. You could sit in Rako's car, see Shisa and Ramen Yoroi-san chatting together, and even spot a cheeky little Momonga and Furuhonya. Also, naturally, there is a huge wall of Chikoa hats and headbands for purchase right out the gate, so you could walk around sporting your Chikoa Oshi. I will say they went all out on the character headband selection. Almost every single guy in the series was there, including the random enemies. As someone who tends to like super obscure side characters in series, it warmed my heart. Deeper into the room, you can find a real-life replica of Chikoa's actual home. Please don't disturb them too much, though. They're very busy studying for their reading exam. Good luck, Chikoa. I know you can do it this time, buddy. What was super cool was the specialized little photo booths they had. You and a friend, or if you're a lone wolf Chikoa enjoyer, that's cool too, sit down at one of the logs and are given the option to take a photo with either Chikoa, Hachiware, or Usagi. Whichever character you choose pops out to join your photo with their own personalized animation, which was such a wonderfully cute attention to detail. Sarah and I both freaked out when a shy little Chikoa shuffled its way over to us, and everyone in the room watched as we took photo after photo after photo, squealing at every single one. Walking by, we encountered a helpless Hachiware stuck in a ditch. Besides sitting there with him while he yelled for help, there was unfortunately nothing we could do for this poor fella as we stared at our own pitiful reflections above us. Knowing they recreated and built a part of the manga that made me cry gave me a very strange mixture of bittersweet feelings, but ultimately it was too cute to fully question the morality of it. To continue into the next section, you have to wander your way through the discombobulating mirror maze of the nightmare-inducing elephant. The lights were flashing various colors, the floor and walls were painted all sorts of disorienting patterns, everything was super wiggly, and I may or may not have crashed into a couple mirrors, who's to say. Sarah and I stumbled out of the very humbling maze eventually, but as staff came over and gave us Chikoa-themed 3D glasses, we realized we weren't safe yet, as there were multiple screens of various enemies hacking
and slashing and call fat spitting in our direction. You really don't realize how many evil, treacherous creatures there are in the series until you sit in front of every single one as they try to get you. In fact, I'm realizing now a lot of the experiences Chikoa Park puts you through are the evil, messed up, life-threatening parts. True Chikoa fans know the series isn't all sunshine and rainbows like you'd expect looking at it from the outside, but that is the part about Chikoa that I love the most. Even in the most wholesome of lands where there can be giant rivers of miso soup, meadows of plants bearing toasted buns, and friendly neighbors that just want to buy cute pajamas, you can still get hit with 8 whole days being kidnapped, starved, and thrown in goblin jail for eating the wrong stupid-ass mushroom. Such is life. Don't stress too much, though. As you can see, things find a way of working out as the giant cyclops Ode thrashes his way through the goblins at true scale. I really liked this section. After you all nearly escape being eaten by goblins, you're led into the shelter of a nearby temple. Chikoa and Hachiware bear curious looks, innocently wondering what could await them ahead. And as you pull back the curtain of the next room, oh, it's the evil, dark, and twisted snake that curses everyone with eternal yearning for the mines, already amassing an endless hallway of brainwashed civilians. Which masochist on the design team pitched this one? Who was it? No, oh, they even have crystallized Usagi. There's a tried and true hater amongst the Chikoa Park designers. And honestly, they deserve a raise. As you try to hurry your way out of the temple, Hachiware is seen having to unsheathe his tiny claws in self-defense of a guard. Up ahead, Chikoa hides behind a mirror as the snake tries to zap them with his crystallizing gaze. It's implied the beam reflects off the mirror and kills the snake, but they don't specifically show it. Yeah, I suppose we should draw the line at actual death in the silly little Chikoa Park experience. Everyone is busted up and bruised, but finally free to leave the malevolent temple. What lies past these doors? Well, with the craziest luck, we happened to be there as Chikoa and Momonga were out that day to greet people. I almost crumpled to the floor right then and there in front of every single employee. Hi, Momonga. I'm a big fan. Don't listen to what the people are saying about you on the internet. They were so cute and energetic, and they even had Chikoa Park headbands of their own favorite or related characters. Any knowers. After many, many photos with our fave, I don't care if you hate him, you can pry Momonga away from my cold dead fingers. We were led upstairs to the second floor of the park, and as we ascended, my jaw was left behind. The entire second floor of Chikoa Park was completely dedicated to custom, exclusive, never before seen Chikoa merchandise. Which, yes, does imply the full story of the walkthrough experience on the first floor is you living peacefully in the world of Chikoa, getting trapped in an inconceivable nightmare maze, somehow escaping only to find yourself being jumped by every violent creature within a 10-mile radius, being thrown in goblin jail, breaking out and running away to a nearby temple, finding yourself surrounded by enslaved creatures controlled against their will to do grueling manual labor for eternity by an evil snake that crystallizes one of your best friends, watching poor anxious Chikoa push to kill in order to release the curse, and everyone escaping within an inch of their lives. I literally could not have written it better myself. That is quite literally the best representation of the series you could possibly present. And as a treat for getting through all of it, you can now spend all of your money. To say it was overwhelming, it is an understatement. There were 5 whole organized areas for shopping and merch. The Chikoa section had big plushies, small plushies, keychain plushies, plushie slap bracelets. The characters came in any size, shape, or form you wanted, and it was very pleasing on the eyes, might I say. Hachiware's area was more centered around decorative items and collectibles. Pens, necklaces, notebooks, tote bags, more keychains of quite literally every character in the series. Household items like plates,
glasses, utensils, this really funny soap dispenser based on Chikawa getting a parasite. Over in Usagi's shop, they had apparel, lots of cute shirts, jackets, socks, and literally my favorite item of the entire store, the character backpacks. They're the perfect size, so freaking cute, and you can show off more of your plushies in the front pocket. Yes, I got the Momonga one. You'll have to kill me to silence my truth. Across the floor was a themed area for popcorn, cookies, various other snacks, but the part that stopped Sarah and I in our tracks was this custom keychain maker section. There were so many charm options. Letters, shapes, characters, references. Sarah and I spent like 15 minutes sitting on the floor together trying to figure out what we even wanted to make. There were too many possibilities. This was probably a lot to digest all at once. So to take a little breather, we can play the little carnival games around the corner. Meatball Korogashi is simple. Roll meatballs down the chute to try and get it in the skee ball hole. You get a trial roll, which Sarah and I both sunk, and then three real meatball rolls, which Sarah and I both utterly failed. In the other game, Kimono Suit Catcher, you had to fling the butterfly-ified Chikawa, Hachiware, and Usagi into spider webs. Kinda messed up, but look, I'm here to win! I didn't get a single one in the net. I was just trying to keep them safe. Sarah actually got one in and won a giant Chikawa pillow. Questionable morality yet again being presented in this twisted establishment, but God, it's a good pillow. Chikawa Park is such a wonderful celebration of the franchise, and I'm so happy it's been successful enough to earn such a grand building and experience. There are so many little details crafted with love and dedication that any Chikawa fan would appreciate, and the inclusive of all the characters means there's something for fans of any creature. Yes, even that evil goddamn star that I want to splat with a fly swatter. Alright, well, that's, why are you... You're looking at me a little funny. I don't know what you want from... Okay, yes, we got a shit ton of merchandise. Everyone watched as Sarah and I frolicked around the merch floor, quite literally like Jaden in a Chikawa shop. It took like 15 minutes for the employees to ring up each of our halls. Everyone was happy for us and encouraged us to get things, but Sarah and I couldn't help but visibly succumb to the shame. With what broken Japanese I knew, I tried to make conversation with the clerk while we waited. Sumimasen. Chikawa daisuki. Hazukashi. If you're wanting to see the Chikawa Park Hall, you're getting a bit ahead of yourself because you might have forgotten we still have more Chikawa locations to go to. There's more. So much more to add to the final haul. Next up was the Chikawa Ramen Shop. The theming of everything was so fun. It was just like a little Japanese ramen spot with all the characters designed to look like they were employees. And even the glasses and bowls were specifically designed to match the atmosphere. Sarah ordered a Momonga soda, which looked like she enjoyed. And I couldn't help myself from ordering a Kurumanju beer. Yes, it was noon. Yes, I don't really like beer. And yes, I get drunk way too easily. But I simply could not pass up the opportunity to have a taste of Kurumanju's iconic favorite beverage. While I very carefully sipped on my breakfast, the staple and only food option of the restaurant arrived. The Chikawa Ramen. Since it has pork in it, I unfortunately chose to abstain. Sarah got to eat it though and said it was delicious, so I believe her on that one too. Also, I think I'm drunk now. Luckily, the next stop was right across from us as we walked directly into the Chikawa Cafe. And thank the Lord because I needed something other than alcohol in my stomach. Sarah and I were fawning over the menu because not only was there more variety, but everything was so cute. Momonga Furuhonya jelly beverage, Chikawa yogurt drink, Hachiware and egg blanket plate, spicy Chikawa curry, Usagi flan, Momonga parfait, interactable Chikawa weeding tiramisu. Look at this menu, you guys! Humanity has peaked! We took turns tasting everything, and it was surprisingly all pretty good. Nothing was bland, none of the desserts were too sweet. I've seen some comments that the curry was a bit too spicy, but honestly, I respect the cafe's commitment to an actually higher
higher than average spiciness, especially when it's colored bright red. By the way, the special cafe collectibles were so cute. Everyone had a little cafe uniform on, and oh. Since we'd finished up our meals, we hit up the Chikawa store in the Tokyo Station Character Street, as well as the Chikawa Land shop in Shinjuku, which were both simpler, but still very great for general shopping. We were very meticulous to go through and appreciate every section of every aisle, so even though they can be seen comparatively as just, you know, typical shops, you can imagine we spent lots of time there too. You know, despite us going to so many Chikawa locations, nothing ever felt repetitive. Even with the small little shops, Chikawa is somehow just so incredibly locked in on making great merch. I don't know how in the world they do it. Plus, they're constantly spitting out more and more. I thought getting into Miku was awful for my wallet, but I'm sorry, Chikawa. I didn't clock how much skin you had in the game. Alright, so the next place we were headed to was the one Sarah and I were the most excited for, obviously besides the park, the Chikawa Bakery. And it absolutely did not disappoint. The design of the shop was divine, from the colors to the decorative characters, all the way down to the actual baked goods. Oh, it was like nothing we'd seen before. And at this point, we had seen a lot of Chikawa, so you can imagine how much weight that statement has. The treats looked so beautiful inside the display, and there were a ton more options than I was expecting. Everything was, of course, really good. I really liked the matcha momonga croissant, but I thought the kurumanju red bean bun was the funniest little guy because it just looks exactly like him. I have consumed his beer, and now I have consumed him. Admittedly, Sarah and I absolutely lost a lot of control over the bakery's merch. Every few minutes, one of us would be like, no, I can't justify buying this thing even though I really like it. Buy it, you'll statistically never come back here ever again. You're right. This was the perfect day. I woke up, was surrounded by Chikawa for 12 hours straight, and then went to sleep. But I'm sure you want to see the damage. Alright, you've been patient. Witness the spoils of our Chikawa adventures through Chikawa Park, the ramen shop, cafe, bakery, Tokyo Station, and store. I admit it looks pretty extreme, but I have an explanation that's not mental illness. Since I've dragged so many of my friends into the Chikawa rabbit hole alongside me, I wanted to get them all gifts to, in a way, celebrate this experience with them. I was only able to bring Sarah along for this trip, but given the opportunity, there would have been so many more people by my side for it. Just that thought alone hit me a bit hard and made me feel really grateful. I grew up with, at the time, pretty niche and uncommon interests, and for the longest time didn't really know what it was like to actually be able to bond with people over shared fixations. Over time, I made friends that got me into their favorite franchises, but Chikawa felt like the first time I was able to get them into my favorite thing and have them genuinely enjoy it. Watching the people in my life take the time to actually get into the manga or anime, talk to me about their favorite characters, send me Chikawa art or memes they found and wanted to share, it felt really new, and I guess I just didn't realize how special it could be to me. So I wanted to spoil as many friends as I could, and given how insane the haul in the end was, it actually made me digest how many friends were impacted by my general excitement, and how many people I can share a mutual interest with now. Any character you saw in the pile that wasn't Chikawa, and in some cases Momonga, was meant for someone in my life that I got sucked into the franchise alongside me. A symbol of someone who I've spent hours talking to over this little thing, and someone that's made me feel really appreciated for simply taking the time to give my favorite thing a try for the first time. To break up the sappiness, I will mention that as soon as I finished setting up this giant wall of Chikawa merchandise to record that shot, Sarah brought her Japanese aunt and cousin over to our hotel room. So these two wonderful, normal ladies, who did not speak a lick of English, simply walked into Sarah's friend, frantically hunched over a giant hoard of probably the most obsessive and off-putting mound of greed they'd ever seen in their entire lives. Without being able to explain it all. Jugo Tomodachi.
Chikawa Tomodachi. Hozukashi.
Since my last Chikawa video, I've seen more and more people finally get into the series as well, and it makes me so happy. It's a long way out, but I hope that one day America can have even a fraction of a Chikawa park that Japan has built, because it's awesome. Thank you for watching, happy end of the year, and long live Chikawa.
Jaden! You already talked about dumb things you're nervous about! Why are
you- Oh, you think I'm done? I'm just getting started!
No, I'm not done. There's more. Sadly. If you're semi-new here or just haven't watched the first video I made about things I'm freaked out about, you don't need to watch them in order. Don't worry about it. It's not like you have to study up to watch these things. I'm not gonna pop out halfway through like, pop quiz! In the first Irrational Fears video, which video game from my childhood did I finally beat after like 15 years? Answer incorrectly and you have to... restart your computer. That's the punishment for not being up to date on every single one of my videos.
But it would be cool if you went and watched it afterwards or something. Whatever you want, it doesn't really matter. It's fine, I don't really care.
This is how you play hard to get, right?
Let's just jump right into it. Things that freak me out slash generally make me a bit nervous, part two. Interacting with people. I feel like a lot of you can probably relate. I actually got curious to know the ratio of introverted to extroverted people, and apparently around 50 to 74% of the population is extroverted. Now that's a big estimation gap, but I thought that was kinda interesting because the majority of the comment sections on my videos are full of introverts. Looking at the bigger picture here, it kinda makes sense though, because all the extroverts are probably just out being with people in the real world. Like extroverts. Well anyway, as a fellow introvert, I avoid interacting with people as much as I possibly can. If there's an option for me to just not talk to people, I'm down. I'm talking about strangers and people I don't really know, by the way. Don't get this picture in your head that I just want to live on the floor of my room by myself in the dark with no friends. You probably weren't thinking that. But just making sure. I think it's common to not want to interact with every single person you possibly can when you go out somewhere, but I think I go an extra step in some situations. Like if you're at the grocery store and you can't find something, an average person would walk up to one of the workers there and ask, "Hey, do you know where I can find the cornmeal?" And the worker would say, "Oh, it's in aisle 3 with the baking ingredients." And the person would be like, "Thanks, not only did I get an immediate answer to my question, but I also know the general direction I need to head to because you physically pointed to where I can find the thing I'm trying to locate." While over in my corner, I can't just walk up to an employee and ask them about something they're paid to know the answer to. Psh, I'm not some social interaction wizard. No, I have to walk to some obscure area no one else is in, pull out my phone, and Google where to find cornmeal in a grocery store. I choose to take an extra 5 whole minutes of my time to do an internet search, then initiate a normal human-to-human interaction. And Google can't point out which direction I have to go. I've got to walk down the whole store scanning the little signs at the top as an extra bonus to find the cornmeal for a video to make bird treats that I'm never gonna use again, and Ari doesn't even end up eating. One time I was in Target and I called my mom to ask her where the deodorant would be because I couldn't find it, and she said, "How should I know? Ask someone there. Why are you calling me? I'm at work." And so I left without buying anything. Which is also a tangent little fear, going into a store, looking around, and leaving without making a purchase. I feel so shady, like the workers probably think I just committed a steal. Then you try to like balance it out or something by looking extra friendly and smiling at the people. "Howdy ho there, I didn't steal. No need to worry about me, I'm a law-abiding citizen who pays for things." But then it's the whole thing like, well, hypothetically, if I were to actually want to steal something, I would try to not look shady by smiling at people like, "Yep, totally didn't just rob you." So they'd probably think I am stealing by smiling at them, and I'm confirming their mind even more. People who work at stores. If you see someone walk in and leave without getting anything, do you assume they stole something? I haven't had a job like that before, so I don't know the thought process you guys have. I just want to know if this can be something I don't need to worry about anymore, and I'm just overthinking everything like I normally do. Please help. Since we're on the topic of socializing with other people, if I do find myself in a conversation with someone, I worry a lot about not looking like I'm paying attention to them while they're talking. I hate it when I'm trying to tell someone something and they're just looking around, they check Twitter a few times, totally not looking like they want to be there. Like, dude, you're gonna miss out on this stellar conversation I'm having with you here that could totally maybe change your life. I'm just kidding, I don't have anything to say that could change anyone's life. But they don't know that, so they're risking that possibility. Also, another side tangent, the word stellar. It's a good word. Why don't people use it more? I vote everyone says stellar more often. Stellar is Stellar.
That was a public announcement.
So that's two things on your to-do list now. Go watch my Irrational Fears Part 1 video and say Stellar more.
I mean, if you want to watch the video, it's nothing really. You don't have to if you don't want to. I just thought I'd mention it again just in case you forgot.
Whoa, hey, let's get back on track. Worrying about not looking like I'm paying attention to someone when they're talking to me. So what I do to overcorrect that problem is focus way too much on making it look like I'm listening to someone. I concentrate so hard on looking like I'm paying attention to a conversation that sometimes I actually do forget to pay attention. I do a 180 and focus more on getting it across that I'm genuinely listening than just actually paying attention. And I don't realize I'm not really hearing what they're saying until the middle of their conversation and it's like, crap, wait, I don't know what they're talking about. I need to start paying attention. And then I focus on trying to make it look like I've totally been comprehending what they've been saying this whole time, and you get the point. A good example of how this can be a bit of a problem is about a month ago, I went to the bank to order some euros because, as you know, I was going to VidCon and stuff.
There's a video on that too if you maybe want to go watch that as well. I mean, it's whatever, like.
When the bank lady was telling me about the ordering process, I was really focused on getting it across to her that I knew exactly what she was talking about and everything was peachy and there were no problems at all. And when she got to the point where she said, so they'll arrive on Wednesday, is that okay? She basically told me when I can pick them up. And without thinking about what day it was or what she actually just said, I went, yep, that's fine. Finished the order and left. It wasn't until a couple hours later, I was at my desk doing some work and it dawned on me, wait, I'm leaving on Tuesday of next week. Did she say this Wednesday or the Wednesday after I leave the country? I'll take my chances. It was the Wednesday before I left. It was fine. But in hindsight, that could have been really bad. And I was too nervous about going back and asking the lady about the order information because that would be extra interaction with another human, and I just told you about how that makes me anxious. I'm gonna screw myself over someday by being like this. I know it. I'll make a video about it, don't worry. Last one for now. So far I'd say I've talked about pretty general things that other shy, anxious people might relate to. But this one's out there. The live action version of the movie Pinocchio. There might be a few of you out there like, oh yeah, when I saw that movie as a kiddo, I thought it was a bit freaky too. No, that's not why it freaks me out. I saw it for the first time as a kid, and I don't recall a single thing about what it's really like or what happened in it, but I just know that that night, I had one of the scariest nightmares of my childhood life. Like, the type of nightmare you never forget, and you just wake up in a pool of your own sweat, like, geez, what in the, how did my brain even conjure up something that horrible? Horribly freaky. The heck? Where did that come from? And at first, I didn't think anything of it. Just a nightmare. They happen. Nothing out of the ordinary. But like, a year or something later, I watched the live-action Pinocchio movie a second time, and I got the exact same nightmare! Yep, these two occurrences are connected. I'm never watching Pinocchio ever again. And I didn't. That's the only movie I refuse to watch as of this point right now. Maybe sometime in the future I'll be brave enough to try and give it another chance, but no, man. I'm good for now. I bet you're curious, so I'll try to explain the scary dream the Pinocchio movie gave me. It's gonna sound dumb, but that's just how dreams are when you try to explain them, okay? Just go with it. I was in a dark room, and I was pinned against this invisible corner, so like, imagine you're in a room and have your back against a corner and you can't see anything, it's all pitch black. And by the way, I was Dash from The Incredibles. That's just, I don't get it either, that's just how it was. Not even Violet, but whatever. So I was Dash from The Incredibles, pinned against this invisible corner looking into blackness, and every once in a while, a big shark would lunge out of the dark and try to bite me. Just a huge shark jump scare at random intervals. Sounds dumb when I say it out loud. I'm not even scared of sharks. But it got really close at some points. It's dumb. Whatever. Anyway, quick off-topic thing. I'm gonna be going to Phoenix Comic Con next week with James and some of my friends. There's not a panel or anything. I'm just gonna go for fun and to be with buddies. So if you see us walking around, then yeah, say hi if you want. I don't know. Yeah. Okay, bye. You guys know Gabe the dog, right? Ah! Well, he died just recently. Rest in tranquility, sweet puppers. Your barks will forever echo in our hearts. I wish his family the best. It's always heartbreaking to hear when people lose their pets. All animals want is love and happy, and it's just so sad because you feel for the people who took such great care of them and loved them, and they had an unbreakable bond, and I just... I'm an animal lover. I can't help myself.
Sorry, calm down. I'm trying to record. Stop! You're messing up the recording! Calm down!
When I heard the sad news about Gabe, it reminded me of my old childhood dogs. And I thought I could tell you some stories because they're a bit insane. I'm surprised I haven't told them sooner, to be honest. I had two dogs growing up. The first one was a Shetland sheepdog, Keisha. Quick fact, growing up, I didn't know what the breed was called, so I just said Keisha dog. And that's what I still call them to this day. I don't have too many memories of Keisha because my parents got her before I was born and I was too young to remember very much from the few years we coexisted, but my mom and dad have told me stories of us, including the one I'm about to share with you. Setting the timeline here, I was really young, 3 years old. I don't have memory of this, but my parents have told me about it many times. So my mom and dad decided that we should all take a nice walk around the neighborhood with Keisha. I was apparently very excited about this and was wanting to go out right at that moment. They told me to slow my roll and wait a bit because they needed to get ready, and we would go out later. But Jaden thought, nah, I'm going now. So I took Keisha and left the house on my own without telling my parents I was leaving. There is now an unsupervised 3-year-old wandering down the street, walking a dog. I can't even imagine what that could have looked like. I don't know how far down the road I got, but by some crazy coincidence, a police cruiser just so happened to be driving by and spotted me. As it started approaching, I guess I was like, shoot, they're after me! Abort! Abort! And before they could ask me any questions, I start booking it back to the house. It was around that time my parents realized I left and were getting ready to go out and find me, and they come out to the front to see their frickin' child, dog leash in hand, hightailing it from this police cruiser that's following me down the neighborhood. Everything was fine. I was fine. The dog was fine. But now you know about the one time I was chased by the police. Keisha was a great dog, as I was told. She was gentle with me as a baby and was like my own fluffy bodyguard slash babysitter. But she passed away before I was old enough to really remember her. I've always loved animals my entire life and would beg my parents to let us get another dog. Years and years of nagging and just, please, Mom, I promise I'll take good care of it, and I'll feed it, and I'll water it, and give it sunshine, and everything a dog needs to grow into a big strong doggo, please! And on my 7th birthday, my dad went behind my mom's back and got me a dog without telling her. Okay, we went to look at dogs before as a group, but it was never an official decision we'd get one. So here's the story of when we got our new dog. My dad went to the place to pick him up. We got him from a dog rescue, which is a recommended place to get animals because you save a life and all that. Try to look into rescues and adoptions over breeders, just a tip I thought I'd just mention. And when he was holding the dog, getting ready to take him home, the dog started peeing on him. Obviously, my dad didn't want that, so he tried to hold him away from his body, but that made the dog nervous, and he turned around and bit my dad's hand. Not wanting to drop the dog on the floor, he tried to shift him over to the other hand, but he bit that one too! My dad came home with pee on his shirt, 2 bleeding thumbs, and a dog. I named him Scruffy. Scruffy was a weird little dog, Havanese breed if you're wondering. He hated my dad and loved my mom, who was ironically the only one who didn't want him. He would follow her everywhere, and when she was at work, he'd sit in the living room and do nothing but wait for her to get back. We always joked that he was just a cat in a dog's body. Come here, Scruffy! Come here! Come here, Scruffy! But we loved him anyway. My mom gave him haircuts to make it look like he had a mohawk. So back to stories. Every morning, our mom would drop us off at our elementary school down the street, and Scruffy would ride in the car too. He'd sit in the back with us and stick his head out the window. But one day, he just jumped out. He freaking jumped out the window of a moving car! We weren't driving fast, mind you, because we weren't on the main road yet, but freaking heck it, Scruffy, you can't just jump out moving cars whenever you want! He ran into the desert because he was freaked out, and we lost track of him. Of course, my brother and I still had to go to school, but I was pretty messed up for the rest of the day. And by the time I got home, he still wasn't found. This was in summer, too. A little black dog in the Arizona sun without water isn't a good combination. And he definitely wouldn't survive a night with all the coyotes around. He'd be like a little happy meal to him. We drove around looking for him for a long time. I was leaning out the window calling his name. And no, I didn't jump out and run away too. We didn't need 2 family members jumping out of car windows that day, you know what I'm saying? After searching and searching for so long, we were actually starting to lose hope. But we finally found him! Scruffy! Time for a bath! Finding Scruffy again was the biggest rush of relief I've ever experienced in my life. Want to hear about the second time he ran away? This was several years later. We were driving back from visiting my aunt in Tahoe, as I mentioned we do in a previous video. But it wasn't just my mom, dad, brother, and Scruffy with us. My dad's dad was with us too. We call him Opa. He's this old retired 4'11" horse jockey, to give you an image of what he looks like. So we were driving in the middle of the desert on our way home, and we decided to stop at a gas station. My mom and I had to go to the bathroom, so she gave Scruffy to Opa and told him to let him go to the bathroom while we went to the bathroom. He was on a leash, so nothing could have gone wrong, right? Right? Yeah, of course not. While we were in the stall, I was still young enough to go in the same restroom stall as my mom, okay? Opa busts in and yells for my mom. There are a few other women in the bathroom too, so they were a bit startled to see this tiny old man come in and start making a ruckus. Yeah? And she sees Opa holding the leash with no dog on the end. Oh, great. Pull up your pants. We're going on a run. Since it was all mostly flat open desert, we were able to see Scruffy still booking it down the side of the road. And since it was a tiny middle of nowhere gas station, the few people that were there were all chasing after him too. Everyone was screaming at each other, "Get the dog! Get the dog!" and running around. Ugh, what a disaster. The thing is, even though Scruffy was a small dog with tiny legs, he could run. Those things can friggin' run. And when he started running, you couldn't stop him. It was like tunnel vision. Need to run, need to run, need to run. Where am I going? I don't know. If I just run, I'll get there. You could try to yell his name. It wasn't like he was gonna listen. He hardly did that anyway. So how'd we catch him? Driving down the road towards us was a white van. They saw that there was a herd of people chasing this tiny dog down the road. So they turned sideways, opened their big van car doors. You know, the kind I'm talking about, the ones that slide. And Scruffy just jumped in. What? Scruffy, hasn't anyone taught you not to jump into white vans with strangers? They didn't even have to offer you dog treats to get you in there. And I could try to lie to you and say they closed the door and drove off with a free dog, but they didn't. They gave him back to us. But think about how easily they could have. Oh, thanks for catching our dog. We could have never caught up to him. I don't think you would have forgiven me if I tried to pull off that ending. And that was runaway attempt number two. He loved us, I promise. Scruffy was a great dog, too. And even though it might not seem like it because I only talked about him trying to run away from us, he was glad to be part of our family, and we all loved him. If you have an animal, make sure you give him a good pat on the head and tell him you love him. Even if it's a snake. Yeah, snakes want love, too. It's sad to hear when animals die. Scruffy dying was the first time I ever had to experience death, and I was really heartbroken when he wasn't with us anymore. But just knowing we gave him a good life and he was a happy little dog helped me feel better. Make sure you give your animal the best life you can while they're still around. All animals deserve to be loved and cared for properly. They aren't your possession, they're a friend and a family member. Give them the right care, the right food, the right toys, the right amount of attention, everything. And make sure you do research beforehand to know exactly what it takes to make sure they're happy and healthy. Too many people impulse buy animals, and the poor thing doesn't end up being treated for correctly. Research and then love. That's the steps. Rest in peace, Gabe. Keep on borking, little pal.
As a kid, I played a lot of DS games. I would be excited to go to the store with my mom while she ran errands just to be able to look at the games in the video game section, and some days, if I was lucky, she would let me get one. Since I didn't know anything about game reviews or top sellers as a kid, I would often choose games based on the cover art and nothing else, like a shallow commoner. So the day I saw this epic-looking dinosaur with flames on it, I knew it was dinosaur gamer time. I had a flashback to when I played this game called Fossil Fighters the other day. I don't remember anything about it other than the fact I just played it a little as a kid and there were cool dinosaurs. And I think I got stuck at the beginning and never finished it. I haven't heard anything about it since, and I'm surprised I was even able to scrounge around and dig up that old dusty memory. I decided to play it and see what Fossil Fighters was really like, because something in my mind told me it was worth revisiting. You boot up the game and the intro... Oh, well, that's familiar. When did this game come out? Yeah, alright, okay. Anyway, I'm not saying anything, let's just start the game. We're not even 5 seconds in. I'm ready for an epic dinosaur adventure. Hell yeah. Play alone? Sure, yeah, if that's how you're gonna phrase it. The game opens up with you on a boat talking to the captain about starting your journey to become a fossil fighter on Vivisaur Island, where you dig up fossils, revive them, and then the natural next step of fighting them against each other. Also, I guess I'm a boy. Oh man, I'm excited to start working to become a world-renowned fossil fighter. I'm ready for the grind. The blood, sweat, and tears. Hours, days, weeks of honing my skills and training my vivisaurs to the best of their ability. I'm gonna give it my all and... is that what I look like? No time to get stalled on comedically questionable character designs. I've got to get Vivisaur finding ASAP. I'm off! Look at me go! They've even supplied me with a map of all the important buildings on the island. We've got the hotel, the fossil stadium, the fountain, Beth. Dr. Diggins is the main Vivisaur scientist slash researcher on the island, and he tells me about fossil reviving and fighting. Apparently, you only need a Vivisaur's head fossil to be able to fight with it. Oh, you're saying I can't have a dinosaur with just legs? Just watch me! Let me revive them legs! They'll kick your ass! He gives me my first fossil to clean and teaches me the basics. The hammer breaks up the rock, the drill gets the finer details, and you can blow into the microphone to blow off the dust particles. After hearing that part, I had to run a quick scientific test. Yep, screaming works just as well. You find fossils at designated areas of the island you travel to. Greenhorn Plains is the only one open to me right now because I'm just a teeny tiny baby level 1 fighter. I'm no soy boy. I left my friends and family to live alone in a hotel on Dinosaur Land. Watch me dig up this fossil like a pro and I'll show you who's the... Oh, what the? Oh, this area is blocked off because there's super mega rare fossils over there and you'll only let me pass by giving you all my dino medals, which are the only devices used to show you're a fossil fighter and have access to your vivisaurs? No, I'm not stupid. I know a sketchy situation when I see one. Fine, take them, let me in there! But not because you fooled me, I just have nothing better to do. That guy stole my dino medals, and also there's nothing but trash here. God damn, I knew it! Hey! You get further in the game and learn about this evil organization called the BB Bandits, who are causing trouble and steal a sacred artifact from the Digga Dig tribe's pyramid. Oh, sorry. Digga Digga Mid. Some high-level fossil fighter went in there to find them, but hasn't come out yet, so the tribe wants to send backup. Yeah, I guess Rosie and I can help you out with that. We'll just head on in there. Oh, what you doing there? Those are some deep hip swings you got going on. Whoa, jeez! You can't just... Dude, she's dead. Well, I guess now it's just me going into this stupid dark digi mid. I'm always the one having to fix all this frickin'... Oh, found them. Guys, I found the BB dudes. They're right there, so I see them. There's a weird dog and some pointy-nosed free... Ah! Well, that didn't go to plan. I didn't... Oh my god, it's Rihanna! And that's where the game ends. Forever trapped in the basement of a Digga Digga Mid. Just kidding. But I'm not joking to tell you I did have to look up a walkthrough because I couldn't figure out the dang puzzle to get out. But I defeated the BBs with my strong Vivisaurs and got this tacky idol. Yay. I'll just put that there. The game continues and you have more encounters with the BB bandits. Collect more weird idols the game doesn't even really think are cool either. Meet other people whose names are all just puns of their character. It's a bit of a grind to go out and dig fossils and then bring them back to clean only for the chance of getting a fossil you need. But I think I'm kinda getting the hang of it now. One thing that even after going through hours of the game I just couldn't get was the Vivisaur type advantages and disadvantages. Air, earth, fire, and ground. And neutral, but those guys are lame. Apparently, fire beats earth, earth beats air, air beats water, and water beats fire. None of that makes sense to me besides the water and fire one, and I couldn't remember the chart for the life of me even after putting 25 hours into the game. I eventually was able to remember air is good against water, but only because I would just think of this. Rosie Rosie gets kidnapped, and after rescuing her, you learn the police chief is the BB bandit boss, so I think you guys are gonna need to do something about that. Then Rosie asks you to meet her at the park at night. She talks about how she was trying to act tough when she was kidnapped, but was genuinely scared and didn't know what was gonna happen to her, and she was so relieved to see me when I came to rescue her. She's thankful for all the times I've saved her, from the guy who scammed her and stole her dino medals, from when she was struck by lightning, from a pit of man-eating sharks. I'm not joking. Then she asks if I hate her by now because of all the trouble she's caused for me. Yes. Alright, so I thought this game would pull one of those, "Oh, Jaden, now's not the time to make jokes, haha." But if you tell Rosie you hate her, she genuinely gets upset and there's no redos. Oh, that's good stuff right there. By this point in the game, you've been having random encounters with this mystery girl named Duna. I don't know what her deal is, but she looks like Zelda. I've become a tough level 6 fighter by now, so I'm allowed to go to Mount Lava Flow, which is literally just a volcano. They're allowing a child to go jump into an active volcano. So you're feeling all high and mighty at this point. Look at me, I have permission to dig up fossils in a volcano. Hee hee hee. And there's a giant meteor in the way. Well, it was worth a try. Oh, hey, Duna, what are you doing here? I was just... Whoa! Oh, that was amazing. Thanks, Duna. I'll just be on my way. Duna? Thanks, Duna. I really owe you one. I'm on a mission from the professor to gather up all these weird, tacky idols because we think there's some mysterious power they have, and you're evil. Give me the idols! No! Give me the idols! No! Wait, you're a dinosaur now? Wait, we're fighting? Haha! Maybe now you'll think twice before challenging me, the almighty level 6 fossil fighter. Oh, shit! So you save Duna, and she thanks you and apologizes for thinking all humans were pathetic and selfish and an evolutionary mistake. A bit harsh, but I guess she apologized. She then explains how she's not human and in fact Dinorian, and her king is planning to destroy all humanity and take over the planet. Wait, what? Wait, now we're in space? What is happening to this storyline? I thought I was just gonna beat up dinosaurs. So Dino, the Dinorian king, is like, "I will kill all humans and take over your planet." And Duna's like, "No, don't! We were wrong about humans! They're actually not stupid like we thought!" And Dino's all, "I'm not listening to you!" So I beat him in a fossil fight. And he changes his mind and is like, "Humans are intelligent! I was wrong!" And then this guy Raptin comes in and is like, "I will continue the king's plans!" And presses the kill humans button, and Duna and Dino's all, "No!" And I'm still just standing there with my dumb face. So bada bing, bada boom, now this Gun-Nash guy is coming to eat the Earth. Oh, so this is my problem now. Jaden, this teleporter will teleport you to Gun-Nash. You're the most skilled fossil fighter we've got, so you're gonna have to fossil battle Gun-Nash's 3 brains. It won't be easy, but you have to win. You can do it. Wait, so I'm gonna fight his brains? I'm going with him! I would like to go as well. Jaden, we've gone through so much. Growing as fossil fighters together and going on so many adventures. You've saved me from so much and I owe you my life. It's time I step up. We can do this. Together. Yeah, I'm picking Duna. Sorry, Rosie, but you're pretty useless and Duna's cool. There's been so much talk and hype about the wrath of Gun-Nash. He sounds terrifying. Now that I've gotta fight his brains, I started getting curious about what he looks like since everyone fears him so badly. Oh. Well, I mean, that's a planet-eating mouth if I've ever seen one. You beat Gun-Nash's brains and are supposed to be teleported out of there, but the teleportation malfunctions, and when you're beamed back to the lab, you realize Duna's been turned to stone with no way to be resurrected. No! It should have been Rosie! I was getting pretty bummed about that because I really like Duna a lot. But Chieftain Dig-a-Dig shows up and tells about a prophecy and the power of hip shaking. And if I shake my hips hard enough for Duna, she should be revived. I'm shaking my hips so hard for you, Duna. Oh my god, you don't even know! She's alive! My hips brought you back! Roll the credits. I loved Fossil Fighters way more than I thought I would. The game's charming and fun and just the right amount of self-aware to make it entertaining and funny, which I didn't expect at all. There were a few times where character dialogue actually made me laugh, and it was surprisingly packed full of story. I didn't even get to talk about half of what went on in the game. It's one of the only games I know that can have this type of graphics and animation and somehow just make it work perfectly. It's not a video game monument or something to go down in history, but it doesn't take itself seriously and tries its best to make sure you'll have a good time and a few laughs while playing it. And I'm glad I was able to experience this weird, weird game again.
PSA, I have to give literally the biggest thanks to Chica Conroy for letting me use his modded 3DS so I can record the footage for the game. He's honestly the one who made this video possible. So thank you, dude. It's really appreciated. I've been really enjoying the animated video game content because I don't think anyone's really doing it, and I'm having a lot of fun making them. So I have a request. If you have a 3DS capture board from the maker Loopy, please send me an email and I'll happily pay you to send it over so I can keep making these videos, because without one, I can't record the footage. Also, please attach a video of the device working as well, so I know it works. I appreciate you supporting me with all the new stuff, and hopefully you stick around for some more. If I can get a DS. Yeah, see ya. Thanks.
Virtual pet games have been around since when people figured out how to make games that weren't Pong. Tamagotchi, Nintendogs, Webkinz, RoboSapien, you name it. And it makes sense. Kids love pets, and parents love not giving their children actual living, breathing animals that'll eventually die and send their child into a spiraling depression for at least 3 days. It's a win-win for everyone. In 2004, my parents gave me a Nintendo DS along with two games to go with it. Animal Crossing Wild World and Nintendogs. They already gave me a real dog at that point, but this was good for stopping me before I started trying to ask for another. Because boy did I not take care of the first one. I actually still have the exact same save file as when I first got the game. This is Star, my first ever Nintendog. I don't know why I named her Star, especially since the shape on her stomach is a heart. Anyway, her stats are maxed out. She can walk longer than any of my other dogs. I was gonna show you, but then... I do not think that we just went on a walk. I haven't seen these dogs in 12 years, and she's the champion of agility training. At least she was, until I tried to do a contest like the good old days, made a fool of myself, and got my dog bullied by the judges. This is Scruffy, named after my childhood dog, who is very dead now. Oh, there's Scruffy. I know you haven't had a human interaction in like 6 years because you're dead, but give me some space, will ya? And the other dogs mean nothing to me. I also wanted to show off my Peach cart toy. I loved this thing as a kid and thought it was super rare, which I actually think maybe isn't because I have two. Anyway, I'm not here to talk about Nintendogs. I'm here because I found a bunch of very strange virtual pet games that are not Nintendogs that I want to show you. First up, we've got Hamster's Life with a Z. And I got these games from eBay and it looks like someone else's hamster is on here. Anyway, oh no, it's one of these games. So I was going through the selection of hamsters and I stumble onto this. The Cutie Hamster. This is quite possibly one of the ugliest hamsters I've ever seen in my entire life. The cute little icon compared to the actual hamster is astounding. I got worse. He looks like an elder, so I'm going to name him Grandpa. Oh, Grandpa wants to play a memory game. Oh no. So you can pet your hamster, feed it, clean the mass amounts of black mold growing in its cage. Hold it with your creepy hand. You can even take him out of the cage and hold it. Alright, I think I'm done for now. You can also give it toys to play with. Oh, he cage is too small. So, you know, Hamster's Life with a Z was as to be expected. Sure, some of the execution was a bit unexpected. But nothing out of the ordinary. Until, what do you say when you turn around, you see a cat, and your heart almost stops? What? I thought you just play little mini games with your hamster and feed them seeds and stuff, but apparently they start learning English. You can talk to them and they'll respond, but you can only say the options the game has provided. Ah, yes, the only phrases a human would ever need. Good evening, come on, and I'm sad. But sometimes the hamster will personally ask how to convey emotions. My friend went away. How should I express these feelings? What should I say when I only have one sunflower seed left? Guys, I taught my hamster how to be sad and now I think he's depressed. But it's okay because 42 hours in, Grandpa now has a cowboy hat and an entire roller coaster. Next up is Parrot Pals. I was excited about this one because, you know, I have my own Parrot Pals. You boot up the game and... you know what? It's not wrong. I picked out my large bird and named him Large, and now I have options on how to interact with him. Care, which is the typical feeding, cage cleanup, bathing. Watching, which is just letting him outside and watching him. You can't interact with your bird while you're watching him. You just sit there and watch him. I mean, I don't know what I expected. And play, which is the minigames. Can't be a virtual pet game without the minigames. There's dribbling, made you look, and tug of war. And I was immediately intrigued by tug of war because I don't know if you know this, but this is what tug of war looks like with a bird. Turns out you have to withhold your strength and not knock over the flag in the middle, which is less exciting if I'm gonna be completely honest. Also, this is what dribbling looks like. It's just keep away with the bird. I don't know, I just wanted to show you what it looked like. Anyway, you can actually talk to your bird and it'll try to have a conversation. Hello, bird.
I don't like you.
Alright, so let me show you the Amazon review that single-handedly made me decide I have to buy this game. Sarah says, 1 star. Within the first 5 minutes, my daughter struggled to get the speak and repeat to work. And when it did work, the bird kept telling her over and over, I dislike you. Until she cried. Need I say more? Also, it was literally like $2. A bit into the game, you unlock training, which lets you teach your bird tricks and phrases to repeat. I was confused on why the game was telling me to teach the bird random phrases like, washed up by the river, there is an old man, and Ogre Island. But then I realized I had to teach the bird this entire 20 phrase long story. I'm not gonna tell you how long it took to get him to learn all that, but just know it was more than I would have committed to if I wasn't monetizing it for content. Then Large just starts going off with the free speech.